We are holding on Kuf Mem He Amud Aleph, fourth line. We were discussing the question about squeezing fruit on Shabbos, and in particular, the last thing we were talking about was the question: if you squeeze fruit, oh, good morning, Ellie. In particular, we were dealing with the question: if you squeeze fruit into food, is that also on Shabbos? Do we say that when you're squeezing juice into food and you're doing it for the sake of the food, in order to flavor or whatever, so now that food is considered to be now that juice is considered to be part of the food. Therefore, what you have is before you had oichel, before you had the fruit that it came out of. Now you also have food. Therefore, you haven't really changed its status, and therefore you haven't done any malacha. So is that allowed, or do we say that not? So we brought that Shmuel had said you are allowed to. So we were discussing. We asked a couple of questions about that, and we answered them. So now we're fourth line of Kuf Mem Hey Amud Aleph. Amud Rabbi Yirmiyah Ketanoi. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says it's actually machlokes tanoim on the subject whether in the, again the question is what's called mashke habala oicho. A juice, a liquid that's coming for the sake of food, is that considered oichel or not? So Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying there's actually a machlokes tanoim on that subject. We learn in a Mishnah, hamachlik ba'anavim, if a person is smoothing out grapes onto bread, so you have a baker is getting ready to bake bread. Before he bakes a loaf of bread in the oven, he takes some grapes and smears them on the on the bread in order to make it brighter and polish it. So now the actual liquid itself, at this point, we're assuming in the Gemara, is not going to be useful at all. It's just, because after all, what's going to happen? He's going to put the bread in the oven, and any of that juice that got onto the surface is just going to be burnt away in the heat of the oven. That's the Gemara. The Gemara is going to take that up in a second. But right now, to begin with, Rabbi Yirmiyah is assuming that what's going on then is, so you have, this is a case of mashka habala oichel. Juice is coming out of these grapes when you're squeezing them, when you're rubbing them on the surface of the bread, but it's mashka habala oichel. And the Mishnah says, loy hochshar, that the grapes are not mukshal kabel tumah by that. Now, the bread itself, there's nothing to talk about. The bread was made with water. Obviously, it's mukshal kabel tumah, but we're talking about the grapes. The fact that juice came out of them is not machshir them lekabel truma, says the Tanna Kamma. Rabbi Yehuda I'm a hochshar. Rabbi Yehuda says it is. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says my lab b'hakam iflevi. So isn't this the underlying machlok? This mar sava mashka bala oichel oichelu or mar sava lab oichelu. So the Tanna Kamma is going to say that mashka bala oichel is considered like oichel. Therefore, you don't have in effect you don't have juice over here to be machshir. To be machshir the grapes, because again, the juice that came out of it is only for the sake of the oichel, it's only for the sake of making the bread look shinier. Umar sova lav oichel, whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say it's not considered oichel, it is considered a mashka, so it's machshir, like any other mashka. So then, in that case, it would come out that Shmuel's din about being able to squeeze grapes or what have you into a pot full of food would work only according to the Tanna Kamma, not according to Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Papa, so the Papa says not necessarily. You could actually say that both the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda agree that it's not considered oichel; it is considered a mashke. So the machlokas over here would involve liquid where it was never meant to be eaten in the first place. It's just going to go to waste because what happens? The baker is using it over here to polish the surface of the bread. But what happens eventually is that he puts the unbaked bread. He puts the dough with this juice squeezed onto it in the oven, and the heat of the oven burns that off. So unlike in Shmuel's case, where you're squeezing grapes into a pot of food and you're going to end up eating that grape juice, you're going to end up that it's flavoring the food. So you're going to end up eating it as part of the food in the pot. Here, you're not. Therefore, marsova mashkahu, marsova lav mashkahu. So now you might have the machlok. This word of Yehuda says, I don't care. I still consider it a mashka, and it's mashka, the kamal tumah, and the Tanna Kamma would say that not. So now According to now, this that we have in front of us, Mashgah Bala Oichel Lav Oichelu, the girsa that we have in front of us is also the girsa that Rashi and Tosfos have, which would mean, in other words, now if we go that way, then what do we do with Shmuel's din? Then it comes out that Shmuel's din about squeezing grapes into a pot wouldn't work according to either the Tanakama or Rabbi Yehuda. And the answer is, according to that, we would say that Shmuel's din follows what Rabbi Yirmiyah had said. Yes, Rabbi Papa is saying you don't necessarily need to say it's a machlokas tanoim, but Rabbi Yirmiyah would say, after all, it is, and you have the Chachamim agree with Shmuel, and therefore Shmuel's din would work according to the Chachamim. There is a girsa that the Gaonim and a number of Rishonim have, which is that the Gemara says that Rabbi Papa says everybody agrees that Mashgah Bala Oichel is Oichel. And in that case, it comes out that we don't have to say, then it's no problem. Then we can say that Shmuel's din works out according to both the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. And the Gemara says, now, if we're going to say, like Rav Papa is saying, that the machloikas has to do with the question of juice that's going to go to waste, whether that's considered a liquid in halacha or not, then plugta dahani tanoi. Then that is subject to the following machloikas tanoim. Tanya, hamafatseya bezesim, if a person bruises olives, the adayim misu'avos, which is with hands that are tamei. Now, what it is fresh olives are not really edible. They've got some kind of bitter sap in them that makes them not edible. So what you do is and bachlal. I mean, even without that, they're hard and they're tough to eat. So what you do is so nowadays, I mean, we usually eat pickled olives and they're softened that way. But when you have raw olives, one thing you can do is you bruise them, like you crush them against a surface or something in order to soften them. Oil comes out a little bit and softens them, right? So if a person does that via daim misu'avos with hands that are tamei, huchsher, then the fruit becomes muchsher l'kabel tumah. Now, either way, the point is, the fruit is muchsher l'kabel tumah either way. The point is, though, if his hands are tamei, means that now the fruit becomes tamei as a result of his hands. Because midrabanon, we say that midrabanon hands that are not washed are sheni l'tumah. So what happens is if these olives are chulin, nothing happens. There's no such thing beyond sheni when it comes to chulin. But if they're truma, if they're olives of truma, then they become a shlishi l'truma, and therefore you can't eat them. It's also relevant. Well, nobody can eat them. Truma tamei, nobody can eat. So. No, you can't. The only thing you can do is burn it, as we've learned before. One other thing would be, I guess, if the olives are cholin, then okay, they themselves are a sheni l'truma. Nothing further happens. You're allowed to eat tamei food, but it means if those olives then go and touch other food of truma, they're going to make it a shlishi. So food can make other. Actually, no, I take that back. Because if his hands are a sheni, then the cholin then becomes a shlishi. No, it would only be relevant if the olives are truma. It would only be relevant if the olives are truma, but then they become a shlishi. Anyway, but the point is they are mochshul the kabel truma, but continues the braisa, l'soif son mamelach. What about though? Now, the reason is because if he's doing this, if he's bruising the olives, he wants the oil to come out of them because that gives them more of a flavor. So therefore, so he wants the juice that came out, and therefore it's l'rotzen. And as we learned before, when juice comes out l'rotzen, then it's machshel l'kabel truma. As opposed to, continues the braisa, l'soif son mamelach, if he's doing that, if he's bruising the olives in order to dip them in salt, where the point is, again, when they're hard, the salt won't stick to them. So he wants to soften them up a little bit in order that the salt will stick to them. Loi huchsher, then they're not muchsher l'kabel truma, because then he doesn't really care about the mashke coming out. He just wants the olives themselves to become soft. He doesn't care about any oil coming out of them. It's not necessarily a given. Because he wants the olive itself to be softer. He doesn't necessarily care that any oil should come out of the thing. Unlike in the first case, he wants the oil because it helps give the olive a flavor. We're not talking about into it. We're talking about the salt that should stick to the surface. So all it needs is to be softer. Softer fruit, the salt will stick to. Harder fruit, it'll just fall right off. The salt will give it a flavor, fine, but we don't care about the salt. The point is that there's no liquid. The liquid that comes out is not l'rotzen, because he doesn't care for it to be there. As far as he's concerned, when he's doing this in order to make salt stick to it, he doesn't care if mashka comes out or not. So therefore, it's not so right. And a third case, Leidei Migir Zeis of Limsakim Lab, if he's doing this in order to check whether the olives are at the point where he could pick them. So therefore, so in other words, he needs to see whether the oil is going to come out easily. So on the one hand, he wants the oil to come out. On the other hand, any oil that comes out at that point is going to go to waste because he's not going to actually use it. So now we have, so there you have a machlokes loy hochsher. The Tanakhama says that it's not mochsher, Rabbi Yehuda Amar hochsher. My lav b'hoka miflagi. So isn't that the underlying machlokes? So one opinion, the Tanakhama would say that Rabbi Yehuda rather would say that even though it's going le'ibud in this third case, that oil is going to be going to waste, and still we say it's considered mashka and it's machshir. Umar sava lav mashkahu, whereas the Tanakhama would hold that not. So therefore, applying that to the case of the bread, if we say that if we say that the machlokas is not in general about oichel, about mashka habala oichel, but rather about that, but rather about juice that's going to go to waste, then that would be exactly the machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim over here. No, because the case of the salt is different. Again, we have one case where he's definitely mochshel lekabel truma, where he wants them to be softer. Another one where he definitely, one where he wants them to be flavored with the oil. He wants the oil to give it a flavor when he's eating it. Then it's definitely mochshel. The second one where he just wants to dip it in salt. All he wants it to do is to be soft. He doesn't care about it. About oil coming out. And then we have the third one. He cares about oil coming out because he needs to. He wants to see whether the oil is going to easily come out and the olives are going to be, whether the olives are ready to be pressing, but it's going to go to waste. Yeah, but Pashas, we're talking about still attached. Well, yeah, no, because, well, I mean, if it was still attached to the tree, then it wouldn't be Mokshul Kabal Truma. Nothing is ever Mokshul Kabal Truma when it's attached to the ground. So, but Pashas, what we mean is he pulls off one or two olives and squeezes them to see, right, exactly. Okay. Amar Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua, but Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua says, not necessarily. But what you could say is like this: Hani tan. It's not necessarily the same machlokas. Hani tanoi b'mashka oben leibud pligi. Yes, in the second case, we are in fact arguing about mashka holich leibud, where it's going to go to waste. But v'hanach tanoi b'mashka oben letzachzachay kamiflegi. But in the first machlokas involving the bread, it's not necessarily that the machlokas has to do with where it's going to go to waste. The machlokas could be, we say, it's not necessarily going to waste, because after all, it's coming to make the bread shiny. It is going to have a purpose in the end, because you're going to have, yes, the actual juice itself gets burnt off in the heat of the oven, but it had an effect. It leaves behind a glaze on the bread. So therefore, so you could say, so it's not completely going le'ibud. Le'ibud would be like the case of the olives, where the oil that you're squeezing out of them is nothing's going to ever happen with it at all. But in the case of the bread, so in other words, we could say there's three different kinds of things. There's where you're actually going to eat the juice, where you're actually going to eat the juice itself as part of the food, which is Shmuel's case, where he's squeezing grapes into a pot of food. You have the case of the bread, where Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua is saying you're not necessarily eating the juice itself, but it's giving a color, a glaze, or whatever. And then you have the case of the olives, where it's not where it's completely going le'ibud. So you could say then that in the first two cases it is considered food, and in the first two cases then it's not considered a mashke, so it wouldn't be mashke the kabel truma. And the third one, or actually in the case of the bread, we would say it's machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim whether such a thing is considered mashke or not, and also in the case where it's completely going le'ibud. But in the case where it actually goes into the food, then they might both agree that it is considered oichol, or it is considered a mashke, as the case may be. The tzatzeach means literally to make it shiny, to polish it. So it means more like a glaze, yeah. Okay. Okay. Continuing on this topic, Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'ashi, Amar Rav. Now, before we quote it in the name of Shmuel, this din that you're allowed to squeeze grapes into a pot of food in order to flavor the food. Now we're going to quote that same thing in the name of Rav. Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'ashi, Amar Rav. Seichet Adam, Eshkol, Shalan Novim, L'Seich HaKdera. A person is allowed to squeeze a cluster of grapes into a pot of food, Avaloy L'Seich HaKara, but not into a plate. So again, we said, you know, is the distinction between an empty pot, where at least though the fact that you're doing it into a pot shows that you're doing it for the sake of the food, as opposed to when you do it into a smaller plate, you might just drink it out of that. Or is the distinction not really between that, but rather whether there's food there or not, whether you're squeezing it into food or not? Okay. Anyway, so you're allowed to do that. And Rav continues, "V'doglet siroi." Now, on the other hand, if you're squeezing a fish in order to get out the juice from it, so you have like a salted fish, like a herring or something that you're squeezing to get the juice out of it, afilu l'secha kara, then you would be allowed to do that even into a bowl. Because the difference is that the juice that's inside the fruit was there to begin with. The juice that's in this fish wasn't in there to begin with. When you salted it, when you pickled it, whatever, then it absorbed. We're talking about over here a fish that was pickled, not just salted, that was pickled, and therefore, yeah, we're going to discuss soon, pickled vegetables. So you have the same thing. The water or the vinegar or whatever that it was pickled in gets absorbed into the fish. Now when you're squeezing it out, from there. It's not the original liquid that was in the fish. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Yosef Rav Dimi v'ka'amala l'hoshvaita. Rav Dimi was sitting and saying over the statement of Rav, Amalei Abaya l'Rav Dimi. So Abaya says to Rav Dimi, Atun Mishmei the Rav Masnisun. You people in Eretz Yisrael have learned the statement about that you're allowed to squeeze grapes into food in the name of Rav, V'loi Kasha L'chu, therefore you don't find any difficulty in it. Anan, but we in Bavel, Mishmei the Shmuel Masninin La, we learn it in Bavel in the name of Shmuel, as we said on the previous Amud, V'Kasha L'chu, and then we have a problem with that if we say that Shmuel said that, because the question is, Mi Amar Shmuel Doglet Sira Afilu L'Secha Kara? How could it be that Shmuel said that you're allowed to squeeze a pickled fish in order to get the juice out? You're squeezing it into a plate, and you might actually use the juice separately. V'ha'itma, we have another statement. Kvashim Shashachdan. What about pickled vegetables that you squeezed? So then you have Amar Rav Legufon Mutter L'Meimehen Potter Aval Oser. So Rav says like this. Now you can have, when it comes to pickled vegetables, and also as the Gemara is going to talk about in a second, shlokos, cooked vegetables, you could have two reasons why you're squeezing them. One could be legufon, namely where you want the pickle itself or the vegetable itself to have a little, to be a little softer so you can eat it more easily or whatever. Like for example, you have, let's say it absorbed too much juice and now when you're eating it, it's going to go spritzing all over. So you want to squeeze it out first in order to get some of that extra juice out. That's called legufon. Versus you want to actually do something with that liquid, maybe drink it, maybe drink it, maybe make soup out of it, whatever. And that would be called lamemo. That would be called for the water, for the liquid that's coming out of it. So Rav says like this. When it comes to kvashim, to pickled vegetables, legufon mutter, Rav says, if you're doing it legufon for the sake of the vegetable itself, namely again that you want to soften it, you want to get out the extra liquid that's absorbed in them, so that when you eat it, it doesn't go spritzing all over. So then mutter, then it would be mutter to do that on Shabbos. Lemei mehen, but if you're doing it because you want the juice itself, potter aval oser, then it would be potter to do that. Because again, Rashi says, because after all, this liquid wasn't originally inside the pickle. It came from the outside, from the vegetable, from the liquid that the vegetable was pickled in. So therefore it would be potter aval oser. Ushlokos. Now on the other hand, Rav continues, when it comes to cooked vegetables, bein legufon, bein lememehen mutter, then you would be allowed to squeeze them whether legufon or lememehen. Because there, once they're cooked already, you can't call the liquid that gets squeezed out of them, you can't call it a mashke at all. It's really considered oichel. It's really part of the food regardless. So therefore, you have oichel from oichel, and we've been saying all this time that that's mutter. So that's according to Rav. So again, according to Rashi, the reason why Rav would say that pickled vegetables, you're allowed to squeeze, if you squeeze them, lemei mehen, for the juice, it's potter aval oser, Rashi says because the juice wasn't in them to begin with. Tosfos disagrees with that and says the reason is because Rav himself is going to say a little further down that midaraisi, you're only chayv for squeezing fruits that are normally squeezed, like grapes and olives. So there's no possibility of an iser daraisa over here, and therefore it's only derabanan, says Tosfos. Anyway, that's according to Rav. Shmuel says that no, whether we're talking pickled vegetables or whether we're talking cooked vegetables, either way, you're allowed to squeeze them legufay, but you're not allowed to, but lememehen, it would be potter aval oser. So then, in that case, so Abaya says, so this statement that you quoted from Rav, that you're allowed to squeeze a fish, so we learned in Bavel that that's in the name of Shmuel. So now we have a problem with that, because how could Shmuel say you're allowed to squeeze a fish, but you're not allowed to squeeze a pickled vegetable or a cooked vegetable? What's the difference? Either way, the juice in it didn't come from the fish or from the vegetable itself. Amalei, Sarab, Dimi answers him, Ha'elekim, I swear in the Ebishter's name, Enai rov aloi zorah, my eyes saw it and not a stranger. It's a Lashon HaPasuk, meaning I can personally vouch that this statement that I quoted is actually from Rav, not from Shmuel, and therefore that you, Bnei Bavel, shouldn't have any problem with it, because it doesn't contradict anything else Rav says. The words kolo kliyose b'cheikiv gomer are the end of the pasuk in that's the end of the same pasuk in Iyov, but it's not really relevant to our sugya over here. Iyov is complaining how even my kidneys have gotten destroyed from the sickness that he had over there, where the Satan is testing, where Hashem gave the Satan permission to test him. Anyway. But Rav Dimi is saying, I personally saw it, not a stranger. Mipumi did Rav Yirmiyah Shmieli. I heard from Rav Yirmiyah that Rav had said this. V'Rav Yirmiyah mirav Zera, v'Rav Zera mirav Chiya Ba'ashi, v'Rav Chiya Ba'ashi mirav. So we have a direct line, we have a direct chain of Masorah that we know for a fact that the statement about the fish was said in the name of Rav. So you, Bnei Bavel, may think that it comes from Shmuel, and therefore you have a problem, but I can vouch that it actually comes from Rav. Okay. Gufa. So now let's get. What? No. Oh, go ahead. Yeah. Okay. Gufa. Getting back to what we said. Kvashim shashachdan. We said kvashim shashachdan. I'm not trying to say that fast. Pickled vegetables that you squeezed. Amar Rav legufon mutar lemehen potter aval aser. So again, Rav said that it's allowed even midrabanan if you're squeezing them legufon, because you want to soften the vegetable or get out the extra liquid so it doesn't spritz or whatever. Lemehen potter aval aser. But we said if you're squeezing the pickled vegetable because you want the juice, then Rav said it's also midrabanan. Even though normally you don't get juice out of them, but still it would be potter aval aser, because again, we make a gzera, because if you do that, you might come to squeeze grapes and olives, which are actually also daraisa. Again, Rashi had said the reason why it's only also drabanan is because anyway, the juice over here didn't even come from the actual vegetable to begin with. It comes from what it was pickled in. Tosfos disagrees and says that no, because since Rav himself is going to say soon that midaraisi only chai for grapes and olives, so automatically everything else is drabanan. Anyway, ushlokes, and then Rav says when it comes to cooked vegetables, bein legufon bein lemehen mutter, then you'd be allowed to squeeze them whether legufon or lemehen, because again, the juice that comes out of them cannot really be considered a mashke, it's considered oichel, because the vegetables were cooked. That was Rav. Shmuel says there's no difference between kvashim and shlokos. Either way, if you're doing it lemehen, it's potter aval aser, it's also drabanan. Well, to do that to begin with, to squeeze them on Shabbos, lemei mehen. Well, no, meaning, yeah, in other words, if you're squeezing them out because you want the juice. So then we're saying it's also according to Shmuel to do that on Shabbos, whether we're talking about kvashim or whether we're talking about shlokas. And then we have a third opinion, Rabbi Yechonon Amar, echad kvashim ve'echad shlokas, whether we're talking pickled vegetables or cooked vegetables, either way, legufon mutter. If you're squeezing them in order to soften the vegetable itself and make it more edible, then it's mutter. But if you're doing it for the sake of the juice, then Rabbi Yechanan says it's actually also daraisa, and you would be chayev chatas. Which means, and Tosfos says the same thing in the case of the fish. Rabbi Yechanan would also say that you're chayev chatas for that. We're going to discuss how certain braises work out according to them, but who is the halacha like? Most of the Rishonim Paskin like Shmuel. Now you have, usually in a machloikas, in Isser Vehetya, usually the halacha, when you have Rav versus Shmuel, the halacha is usually like Rav. But here we have Rav saying that it's mutter, Shmuel saying that it's potter aval aser, Rabbi Yochanan saying that it's chayev chatos. So in effect, what you have is Rav and Shmuel are a majority against, in effect, what you have is that Rav and Shmuel are a majority against Rabbi Yochanan. So therefore it can't be chayev chatos, but it would be also drabanan because of Shmuel's opinion. So again, Rav agrees that when it comes to kvashim, it would be potter aval aser. So Shmuel is saying the same thing. So actually, so that's what it is. When it comes to kvashim, then we have both Rav and Shmuel are saying that it's potter aval aser. So therefore, most of the Rishonim say the halacha is like that. Then we would say that the halacha also would be if I remember correctly, would be potter aval also. You have Rabbi Tosfos brings from Rabbi Chananel that actually they would be also daraisa. That actually they would both be also daraisa, because even though you have Rav and Shmuel against them, the halacha would still be like Rabbi Yechanan. So that's, we're talking about pickled or cooked vegetables. So the bottom line is that according to all of that, it would come out. So if you're squeezing pickled vegetables, it would be also to squeeze on Shabbos. If you're doing it for the sake of the juice, you'd be allowed to squeeze them again if you're doing it for just in order to soften up the vegetable and make it more edible. In the case of shlokas, I'm actually not sure about. And you do have the opinion of Rabbi Chananel that all of it is also daraisa, actually. Shlokas where it's cooked. So you're not doing it. No, you could, because you could still, you want to soften it some more, or you want to get out the extra juice that was absorbed in it, versus where you want the actual juice itself in order to drink it separately or something. Yeah. Okay. So it is a little bit complicated. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Meisvi, I have a contradiction on all three of these Amiroim. A braisa says, "Seichtim kvashim b'Shabbos l'tzarich haShabbos." You're allowed to squeeze pickled vegetables on Shabbos where you're going to be doing it for the sake of Shabbos. B'pashtus, that means where you want the juice itself on Shabbos. Avol loyla matzoi Shabbos. You're not allowed to do it on Shabbos in order to use them on matzah Shabbos, because you're not allowed to prepare on Shabbos for weekdays. On the other hand, you're not allowed to squeeze grapes and olives on Shabbos. If you do squeeze them, you're chayev chatos. So this braisa it doesn't work according to any of them, because all three of them are saying there are rules about when you're allowed to squeeze kvashim and shlokas. Sometimes it's also even chayev chatos according to Rabbi Yechanan, and the braisa here is saying a blanket statement that you're allowed to squeeze them on Shabbos l'tzarich haShabbos. So what's going on over here? The answer is Rav Matarit Zatayimei, Shmuel Matarit Zatayimei, Rabbi Yechanan Matarit Zatayimei. Each one of them is going to have a way of explaining the Braisa according to their Shitta. Rav Matarit Zatayimei, Rav will explain it as follows. Seichtim kvasha b'Shabbos l'tzarich haShabbos. You're allowed to squeeze pickled vegetables on Shabbos for the purpose of eating them on Shabbos. Avaloy l'metzoy Shabbos. Bamed v'ram amurim. Rav would say the Braisa, we have to add something to the Braisa. When are we talking about legufan? Only if you're squeezing them because you want to soften the vegetable or get out the extra liquid itself. So you're doing it for the sake of making the vegetable more edible than it was. Aval lemeimei and potter aval aser. But if you're doing it for the sake of the juice, then it would be potter aval aser. Ushlokos, and then we would also add that the braisa, we would also have to add to the braisa, what about cooked vegetables? Bein legufan mein lemeimei and mutter. Then you'd be allowed either way, because Rav again holds that with cooked vegetables, either way you're allowed to squeeze them. And then going back to the braisa, v'zeisiv anovim lo yuschot. Now on the other hand, grapes and olives you're not allowed to squeeze on Shabbos. V'im socht and chayiv chatas. If you do, then you're chayiv chatas. So that would be according to Rav. Shmuel Matarit Zatayimei. Shmuel will understand the Braisa according to his Shitta, namely like this. But Seichtin Kvasha B'Shabbos Atzorich HaShabbos, Hu Hadin L'Shlokos. The same din would also apply to Shlokos, because according to Shmuel, Kvashim and Shlokos have the same din. Both of them, we said, Legufa, and it's allowed. L'Memehen, it's Potter Aval Aser. Pickled. Kvashim is pickled. Shlokos is cooked. Right, so Shmuel would also add in that the Braisa implicitly is talking about Shlokas, but unlike Rav, who says the Braisa is talking about Kvashim, and then Shlokas would have a different din, Shmuel says that no, the Braisa is mentioning Kvashim, but the same din equally applies to Shlokas, because according to Shmuel, those two have the same din. When is that talking about when you squeeze, that you're allowed to do it on Shabbos, is when you're doing it Legufan, when you're doing it in order to make the vegetable itself more edible. So if you're doing it for the juice, then it's potter aval aser with either kvashim or shlokas, because again, that's how Shmuel holds. V'zeisim v'andavim lo yischot. You're not allowed to squeeze grapes and olives. V'im sochat chayiv chatas. If you do, then chayiv chatas. So that would be how Shmuel would understand the braisa. Then Rabbi Yechanan, Matarit Zatayimei, Rabbi Yechanan now is going to understand according to his shita, and he would say like this: Seichtim kvashim l'tzarech haShabbos, avaloy l'metzarech haShabbos, echad kvashim ve'echad shlokas. So far, he would say like Shmuel, that kvashim and shlokas both have the same din, so you wouldn't be allowed to squeeze them on. You wouldn't be allowed to squeeze them on Shabbos. You're allowed to on Shabbos legufan. when you're doing it in order to soften it up, that Rabbi Yochanan agrees with both of them that you're allowed to. Bamed varnam amum legufan. When is that talking about you're allowed to do it on Shabbos where you're doing it legufan? But if you're doing it in order to use the juice, then Rabbi Yochanan would say, the Braise is saying, not only you're not allowed to squeeze it, the im sochat, if you squeeze them, nase kamisha sochat zeisim va'anovim, then we consider it as if he squeezed grapes and olives, v'chayev chatas, and then he would actually be chayev chatas, because that's what Rabbi Yochanan holds, that you're chayev chatas for squeezing anything, l'may mehen. Okay. So each of them has their way of explaining the Braise so that it doesn't contradict their shita. Okay. Omer of Chia Ba'ashi Omer Rab, Dvar Torah ain't a chayev el al drisas zeisim va'anovim bovad. Mina Torah, you're only chayev for squeezing grapes and olives, because those are the only vegetable, those are the only ones that it's usual that most of them are squeezed. So we discussed before about maybe berries and pomegranates, where maybe some people squeeze them, but here, grapes and olives, almost everybody squeezes. Therefore, you're chayev, therefore you'd be chayev mina Torah for them. Again, you know, we talked about yesterday as far as lemons. So you have a question, when you have a certain kind of fruit, where in a different time, in a different place, most people squeeze it, would it be in the same category? And would it be in the same category as grapes and olives? So for example, that might be a question nowadays about lemons. Most people don't eat lemons by themselves. Most people squeeze lemons for their juice. Most lemons are squeezed for their juice. So maybe that would be in the same category as grapes and olives nowadays. Okay. And by V'chein Tonad Ve'Menashe, we learn similarly in a yeshiva, in a braisa from the yeshiva of Menashe, Dvar Torah Ein Chayev El Al Drisa Zeisim Anov Milvad, that Menat Torah you're only chayev for squeezing grapes and olives. And by the way, Tonad Ve'Menashe taught a different din in the same braisa, unrelated, V'ein Eid Mipi Eid Kosher El Al Eidus Isha Bovad. Also, by the way, another din, usually, you can't have aid me p aid. Usually, your aid can't give hearsay evidence. You have to have an aid's evidence has to be that he actually saw the thing happen, like the expression of Jimmy used before, enei ro v'loizer. But there is a case, the only case where it would be mutter would be l'edus isha, would be for the edus that makes a woman mutter to remarry, namely edus that her husband died. So for that, we allow aid me p'aid. The Gemara tells us, the Mishnah and the Gemara tell us at the end of Yevamos that the Chachamim were makel over there. Now, even though, I mean, we're talking Eishas Ishas Daraisa, but yeah, so Rashi over here actually explains that it's based on the idea, kol de Makadish adayta de Rabbanan Makadish, that whenever a person is Makadish, a woman, he does it based on the consent of the Chachamim. So in a case like this, the Chachamim are able to undo the Kedushin and make it as if there was never a Kedushin here in the first place. And therefore, it means they were never married. Therefore, so now she's allowed to be married. So even though it's midaraisa, but the chum are able to be mafkia the kedushin. You have that concept in a number of places in Shas where there are extreme cases where the chum are mafkia the kedushin. There is also a further point. The Gemara explains on it in several places in Yevamos. It's based on a concept called isha daika uminsva. Given that there are going to be all kinds of penalties for her if she does end up marrying and then her husband turns up alive, then she's going to be very careful and check into it and not get married just willy-nilly. So therefore, the Chachamim figured that they can trust her in a case like that. Anyway, the point is that so when it comes to aid or sisha, then we allow aid mipi aid in order not to leave her in aguna, but otherwise not. So Iboilahu, so now we have a question. What about aid mipi aid la aidus b'chur mahu? Would you be able to use an aid mipi aid for a b'chur? Now you have like this, a b'chur of an animal, the Yisrael has to give the b'chur to the Kohen, and eventually nowadays that there's no Beis HaMikdash, yeah, the Kohen has to wait until it develops a mum, and then he's able to shecht it and eat it. The problem is that Kohenim are choshud on making a mum in a b'chur. We learned about this in Bechoris. We also mentioned it briefly in Brachas. Because after all, the Kohen may think to himself, why should I bother? I may be raising this animal for 5 years before it ever develops a mum. So therefore, let me make a mum in it now, which would be an Issu Lav. But fine, he's saying, let me be over on the Issu Lav, and then I'll be able to shecht and eat it. So because of that, we say that we don't trust the Kohen to say that the mum happened on its own. We need an aid to say that. So now the question is, can we have aid mipi aid? Can we have hearsay evidence that the Kohen didn't make the mum himself, but rather that the mum happened on its own? Well, so not right away, actually. In Bechoros, it talks about that it depends whether it's a behema gasa or behema daka. The Yisrael holds on to it for 30 days or 50 days or whatever until, like, it's a, that way, like, it's already a little bit more mature, and that way the Kohen is not having the bother of raising it from birth. The main thing is you give it to the Kohen. Eventually, what happens is it develops a mum, and then the Kohen shechts it and eats it. If it gets a mum by the Yisrael, right? He said then. Well, so if it gets a mum by the Yisrael, it's still matnas kohuna. He still has to give it to the kohen. Once the kohen shechts it, you have machlokas b'shamay b'shilol whether Yisraelim are able to eat from it. The halacha is that yes, but either way, it still has to be given to the kohen. Okay, so as again, the question is, given that kohenim are suspect about making a mum in the animal, if we have aid mi pi aid that says that they didn't, can we trust that? So Rab Ami osir, Rab Asi shari. So Rab Ami said it's osir, Rab Asi said it's mutter. Amalei Rab Ami le Rab Asi, v'altana dve menashe, ein eid mipi eid, kosher elo la'edus isher bilvad. So Rab Asi says, how could you be matter it? We just said from this braisa that only for edus isher do we allow eid mipi eid. This is not edus isher. The answer is, he says, Ema la'edus cho isher ksher elo bilvad. That's not what Tana Dvei Menashe means. What he means is any edus that a woman would be kosher for that edus, you're allowed to have aid mi pi aid. Now, when it comes to this thing of the mum of the bechor, a woman's edus is accepted. If she says that I know that I saw that this, not I saw, if she says I heard from somebody who saw that, a woman herself is kosher for this edus. She can say, "I saw this mum happen on its own, not that the kohen made it." And we believe the same thing. Because of that, the same thing goes for aid mipi aid, because the two things go together. When a woman is kosher for edus, just like it is to be matu and aguna, so it is also for a bechor. Anytime when a woman is kosher, then aid mipi aid is also kosher, is what Rav Asi is saying. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Rab Yema achshu eid mipi eid lebuchar. Rab Yema one time actually did that. He was matir because of an eid mipi eid that the koyin could shech the bukhur and eat it. Kori ale marema Yema shori bukhra. So marema said on him, look at this, Yema who's matir bukhuras, and he was criticizing Rab Yema for relying on such a kula. But the hilchasa, the bottom line halacha is yes, aid mi pi aid, kosher lebuchar. As a matter of fact, yes, it is kosher. Just like we say that a woman's edus is kosher for that purpose, aid mi pi aid is also kosher. And therefore, yes, you can have a woman say that this mum happened on its own and allow the kohen to shech the bechor and eat it. And you can also have aid mi pi aid. Is that he can shech it and eat it. As long as it doesn't have a mum, it's supposed to be brought as a korban. And you can't eat it out, so you can't shecht it and eat it outside the Beis HaMikdash. So there's no Beis HaMikdash. So the Kohen may figure, why am I bothering to raise this animal indefinitely? It may never develop a mum. Let me just make a mum in it and have done with it. So because of that, the Kohen are choshered to do that, and therefore we have these rules. No, I was just giving 5 years as an example. The point is that he might indefinitely be raising this animal. He doesn't want to do that, so yeah. Okay. Well, that's the vort, in other words. That's why we don't give him the animal when it's a baby, because then it means that he has the tircha of raising it from the beginning. It's called koyin amaseyeya bebeis agronis. It's like you're giving the koyin the matnas kohuna in return for the fact that he's doing you a favor and raising the animal. You're not allowed to do that. So like this, you wait until the animal is a certain age, 30 or 50 days or whatever, and then you give it to him. That way it's more bekavod. But now, at that point, now he has to wait till it develops a mum. So again, he's choshered to put a mum, and that's why we require some kind of edus that he didn't do that. So now we're saying that either a woman's edus or aid mipi edus kosher for that purpose. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, chalos dvash, we said that if you have honeycombs that were crushed before Shabbos and honey is oozing out of them. So now we said, so in the Mishnah we said, the Chachamim had said that you're not allowed to use that honey on Shabbos. Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Elazar said it's mutter. So now let's discuss that. When Rabbi Hoshia came from Nahada, Osav Aisi Masnisa Biyadeh. He came from Nauda and he brought with him a brisa which the Chachamim didn't know of before, which says Zaysim Vanovim Shiriskan Me Erev Shabbos. If you crushed grapes or olives on Erev Shabbos, the Yotz Me Atman, and then on Shabbos juice flowed out of them, Asurin, then it's Osir, Virabalaza Virab Shimon Matirin. Virabalaza and Rab Shimon say it's Mutter. Now, on the face of it, that basically is the same din as the case of the honeycombs. So therefore, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Gavri Yisera, also Lashminen. What exactly is Rabbi Hoshia's Braisa's Chiddush? Just to tell us that there's another opinion that says that it's Mutter? Very nice. The Mishnah said Rabbi Lazar says it. The Braisa is saying also Rabbi Shimon. What's the difference? What does that tell us? Amar Abaya Tuva Kamash Malan. Abaya says, actually, this Braisa is telling us a great deal. If we only had the Mishnah involving the honeycombs, have a minute. You would say, you know what? Because the difference is, the honey that was in the honeycombs, originally it was oichel when it was in the honeycombs. Now it's also oichel. I mean, honey is considered a mashke as far as the shiva mashkim, but in terms of how people eat it, it's usually thought of more as an oichel. You don't drink honey after all. So therefore, before it was oichel, now it's oichel. So therefore, you would say that maybe that's why Rabbi Lazar allows it. Aval hachad meikra oichel of a soif mashke. Over here, when it comes to grapes or olives, it started out as oichel and now it became mashke. Eimaloi, maybe not. Kamash malan. And therefore, the Braisa is telling us that even in that case, Rabbi Lazar is allowing it. So this is now. We had all this time. We had Rabbi Yehuda said. We had the Chachamim saying. You know, we had the Chachamim saying that it's also any kind of juice that oozes out of fruits on Shabbos, as long as those fruits are sometimes squeezed. We said Rabbi Yehuda would say grapes and olives it is also, but berries and pomegranates, it depends whether you usually squeeze them or not. It depends whether you set them aside for food or not. Now we have Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon are being very makel and say as long as you crush them before Shabbos, then you would actually be allowed to drink the juice that comes out of them on Shabbos. So that's the point. They're saying once you crushed it, there's no possibility that you're going to crush it some more. Therefore, the juice that comes out of them on Shabbos would in fact be allowed. Would be allowed, yeah. Because you crushed them before Shabbos, right? And that is in fact the halacha. So if you crush them before Shabbos, you are allowed to drink the juice that comes out on Shabbos. And the same thing with honey and honeycombs. Okay. Mishnah says, continuing on the topics of preparing, of food preparation on Shabbos. Kol shabba b'chamin me'erev Shabbos. Anything that was cooked in hot water before Shabbos, shorin oseh b'chamin b'Shabbos. So now on Shabbos, you're allowed to soak it again in hot water in order, Rashi says, so it dissolves. So in other words, you have a concept called ein bishul acha bishul, that you have once something was cooked, then cooking does not apply to it again. So therefore, so you'd be allowed to in this case. Now you actually have a machlokas aposkim about that. In particular, when you have something dissolves or liquid comes out of it, whether there is bishul achabishul in it. So according to those opinions, the shodin of acham and b'shabbos would be maybe you'd be allowed to soak it in hot water in a kli shein, not necessarily in a kli rishon. Everybody would agree you can't put it into a pot on the fire on Shabbos, but you'd have a machlokas whether you could do it in a kli rishon or only in a kli shein. And on top of that, you have a concept that we learned way back in the third perek, that you have a concept that certain things are kalei habishul, they cook very easily, even in a kli sheini, and therefore with those you might have a problem. But anyway, the point is that basically the idea is you cooked it before Shabbos, therefore you're allowed to warm it up again on Shabbos, because in certain cases we say ein bishul ach habishul. If it wasn't cooked in hot water before Shabbos, for example, Rashi says, let's say dry meat. Now you could eat it. You could eat it as beef jerky, but it wasn't cooked before Shabbos, so you're not allowed to cook. You're not allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos because that would be cooking it. But medichin oseh b'chamin b'Shabbos, you would be allowed to rinse it with hot water on Shabbos. And again, you have a machlokas whether rinsing would involve pouring hot water over it. Would it mean from a kli rishon or a kli sheni? Chutz min amaliyach hayoshon, except for old salted fish. Old, Rashi says, means it's from last year. So it was salted, and then it's been preserved since last year. The dogim maluchim ktanim, also small salted fish, like small salted fish, like sardines or whatever. Bekulya sa isponin, and kulya sa isponin, which is a type of fish. Isponin means that it comes from Spain. All those, and so that if you salt it, you're able to eat it You're able to eat it salted. You don't have to cook it once you rinse it with hot water. So those, Chanda Chosin, Zuig Marmelachten, all three of those things, just pouring hot water over them is enough to finish the malacha of cooking them, and therefore we also to do that on Shabbos. Well, the point is, and he's also making it right. He's making it that now he's able to eat it once he, because the, in other words, they're soft. These things, so the dogim maluchim, the maliach yashan, the old salted fish. The point is, once you pour hot water over it, that's the last thing it needs in order to be edible. You already had it was salted, it was preserved. All you need is to get rid of the salt and maybe cook it a little bit, and therefore that would be my malacha. And the same thing with the other two. The same thing with the sardines or other small fish, and the same thing with the kol yasei spanin, in particular the kol yasei spanin is a fish that has a very soft skin. So pouring hot water over it is enough to cook it. Again, Rashi learns a little bit differently, that it means that it would have been edible. So it would have been edible salted. So like this, you're pouring hot water over it. It has two effects. It removes the salt and it cooks it. The Rambam seems to understand, even if you didn't salt it, just the fact that you're pouring hot water over it is enough to cook it. So that would be also, that would be the Gemara Malacha, that would be Bishul. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Kegoin Mai, the first part of the Mishnah, when we're talking about something that was cooked in hot water before Shabbos, and now you're allowed to put it again, now you're allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos to warm it up. What's an example of that? Amar Rab Safra Kegoin Tam Negil to Rab Abba. For example, the chicken that was made by Rab Abba. Now, what is that? Rashi explains that he would cook the chicken, and then he would soak it for a long time in hot water until it dissolves. And then once it's dissolved in the hot water, then he would drink it as a medicinal thing. What? So it's like chicken soup, but the difference is chicken soup, you don't actually cook it long enough for the whole chicken to dissolve in there. You cook the flavor of the chicken gets into the soup, and you sometimes have the chicken is left in the soup. Here we're talking about it actually dissolves in here we're talking about the chicken actually dissolves in the soup or in the hot water over a few days. So that would be an example of something that was cooked before Shabbos, where therefore you're allowed to soak it again in hot water. You're allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos. The point is the chicken itself was cooked before Shabbos. Now you're allowed to put it in the hot water to start dissolving it. Now you have, that's according to Rashi. You have a couple of other explanations. Rabbi Hananel and Rabbi Nissim going bring a couple of other explanations. What exactly this time to go to the Rabbi Abba is. Rabbi Hananel explains it was very, very salted. So it's like the fish at the end of the Mishnah, that it was very, very salted. When you want to eat it, you soak it in hot water in order to dissolve away some of the salt so you can eat it. So that would be an example. Again, it was cooked, it was salted or whatever, and now you just want to warm it up and get rid of the salt. Rab Nissim Goin brings yet another explanation from Rab Hai Goin, that it is it's a stuffed chicken. You cook the chicken, then after you cook it, you take it out of the soup, you stuff it with spices, and then when you're ready to eat it, you soak it in hot water and then you eat it, and now it's hot again. Now, the reason why these various explanations are very important is because that's negeya lahalacha as far as, again, the Alter Rebbe's shita in particular. You can find it in the back of the Siddur in Hilchos Rab Shabbosa, that yes, ein bishul acha bishul, but if some of it dissolves, then there is bishul acha bishul. So then in that case, when we talk about over here, this thing that dissolves, so what's the din? So according to Rashi's explanation, it would come out, you are allowed to, because that's what we're saying. The chicken is going to dissolve in the liquid, and we're still saying it's mutter. But according to Rabbi Hananel's and Rabbi Nissim's explanations, it wouldn't, because the chicken is not actually dissolving. You're just warming it up in the hot water. Nothing of it is actually dissolving into the water. According to Rabbi Hananel and according to Rabbi Nissim Goin, the chicken was cooked, but nothing. It's a dover yavish. It's a dry thing. To now, you would be allowed to put it in hot water. Again, we're saying, but because nothing of it now is dissolving further into the water. None of the liquid that's in the chicken or whatever, it was salted or it was spiced or whatever. So all of the liquid came out of it. It's now basically a hard solid piece of meat. And now when you're putting it in water, nothing of it is dissolving into the water that you could call bishul. As opposed to, according to Rashi's explanation, where the chicken itself is actually dissolving, that wouldn't work according to the Alter Rebbe. So in fact, in the back of the older, in the back of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, you have notes over there from Reb Nechemya Dubrovner. So he discusses this point and mentions that this that the Alter Rebbe says that you can't put something in hot water if it's going to dissolve. That would work. That would be according to Rabbi Nechanan or Rabbi Nissim's explanations of our Gemara over here, not according to Rashi's. Okay. Rab Safra says, I want to tell you, by the way, what this Tana Gilta de Rab Abba is, how unappetizing it is to some people. Zimna Chode Ikleis Lahasim. Rab Safra says, one time I visited there, meaning Eretz Yisrael, they gave me some of this Tana Gilta de Rab Abba to eat. The Eloi Rab Abba, the Ashki and Chamra, by Tlos of Tarpi, if it hadn't been that Rab Abba was right there on the spot and gave me some good old wine to drink that was 3 years old, itnesi, I would have been nauseated and I would have thrown up because the Tana Gilta de Rab Abba was so disgusting. Well, the point is, according to Rashi, that it was actually dissolved in that the chicken itself dissolved into the soup. You don't have that kind of thing nowadays. But so it was a liquid; it was dissolved. But the point is, Reb Safra considered that to be a very disgusting thing. According to Rabbi Hananel's explanation, or according to Reb Nissim's explanation, also Reb Safra did not like the taste of it. And the Gemara continues in this connection, Rabbi Yechanan Royek Mikortach de Bavloi. Now, on the other hand, so we're saying that Rabbi Safra ate this town of Gota de Rab Abba, which was something that they made in Eretz Yisrael, and he found it disgusting. The flip side of it is Rabbi Yechanan found Kortach HaBavli disgusting and would spit at the mention of it. Kortach HaBavli, we have all over Shas, is a dip that they used in Bavel. It was made out of sour milk and bread and moldy breadcrumbs and salt. So Rabbi Yechanan, who lived his whole life in Eretz Yisrael, would be disgusted and would spit whenever he thought of or whenever he heard about Kotach HaBavli. Amr Rabbi Yosef, so Rabbi Yosef says, why are you insulting our food from Bavel? V'leiro kanan mitana gulta de Rab Abba. We could also spit when we think of tana gulta de Rab Abba, which is also, like Rabbi Safra said, something that a person could be nauseated of. V'oid, and not only that, you think that Kotach HaBavli is that bad? Amr Rabbi Gaza, but you should know, Rabbi Gaza says, Rabbi Yechanan maybe holds it that he doesn't like it, but other people in Eretz Yisrael actually do. They're not used to it because it's made in Bavel, but you should know, when people in Eretz Yisrael get a hold of it, Rabbi Yosef says, they really like it. Zimna Chode Ikleis Lalsim, Rav Gaza, who was from Bavel, says, one time I visited Eretz Yisrael, but of this Kotach de Bavloi, and I made some Kotach HaBavli, She'ilumine Kol Brichim Arava, and all the sick people all over Eretz Yisrael were coming and asking for some of it. So you see, in other words, Rabbi Yosef says, Kotach HaBavli is not so bad. Rabbi Yechanan may not like it, but you shouldn't think that that's typical of Bnei Eretz Yisrael. Well, maybe the point is even sick people who usually there's fewer things than normal that they'll eat, even they like the Kotach HaBavli. Okay, maybe. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Kol Shaloi Baba Chamin, we said that anything that was not cooked in hot water before Shabbos, you're not allowed to soak it in hot water on Shabbos. All you're allowed to do is pour hot water over it. Again, from Kli Rishon or Kli Sheni, according to the different opinions. So the question is, what happens if you do put it? What happens if you do soak it in hot water? Is it also daraisa or drabanan? Amar Rabbi Yosef hidia chayev chatas. Rabbi Yechanan says it would actually be chayev chatas. Amar ma'abrei de Ravina afanan namitanena. So ma'abrei de Ravina says, yeah, as a matter of fact, we can see that from the words of the Mishnah. Chutz mimaliach yoshan. We said except for old salted fish, v'kol yasei spanin, and kol yasei spanin, this fish that comes from Spain. It's tuna. Earlier in the Masech, the Rashi translates it as tuna. Yeah, about some other Mefarshim, I think, who translate it as mackerel, whatever it is. Again, it's some kind of fish that is very easily cooked with hot water. Shadachos and Zurig Marmalachton. We said that soaking them in hot water is enough to cook them, and that completes the malacha. Shmamino. So we see from that, since the Mishnah is calling it Gmar Malacha, that means it's Bishul, and therefore it would be also Daraisa. So the same thing with anything else that we're saying in the Mishnah over here, if you soak it in hot water, then it would be also Daraisa. So again, therefore what we have is like this. Things that were cooked in hot water before Shabbos, you're allowed to put them in hot water again in order to warm up on Shabbos. Again, you have the Alter Rebbe's point that doesn't apply if any of it dissolves. So therefore, for example, the Alter Rebbe says, let's say you have cooked chickens. Now you have, there's still fat in them. When you put them near the fire, then the fat dissolves and melts. So therefore, that would be also on Shabbos. So you have that. You have category number two, we said, are things that were not cooked before Shabbos, but you're allowed to rinse them with hot water, namely by pouring hot water over them from a klirish and a klisheni. And then you have, but you're not allowed to soak them in hot water. To soak them would be also daraisa and rechayev chatos, but you are allowed to rinse them by pouring hot water over them. And the third category are the last things mentioned in the Mishnah, the old salted fish and the kol yisei spun, et cetera, where you're not even allowed to rinse them in hot water because they cook easily as a result of that, right? So in the first case, you're taking something that was already cooked before Shabbos and putting it in hot water in order to warm it up. In order to warm it up again, Rashi also says in order for it to dissolve. Again, that wouldn't work according to the Alter Rebbe, but according to the other poskim, that would work. That you do, even though it was a davar yavish, but even though some of it is dissolving, that's fine. In the second case, you're doing it, it wasn't cooked. But again, you're putting it in hot water in order to warm up, in order to dissolve. Or no, you're not putting it in hot water. We said that would be also daraisa, because bishul, but you're pouring hot water over it again in order to warm it up and in order to soften it up a little bit. Rashi had given the example in the Mishnah. Let's say, for example, salted, let's say, for example, dry meat, where you want to pour some hot water over it in order to soften it up and make it more edible. Okay. So the Gemara tells a story in this. So that proves that yes, in the case of, in the second category of things in the Mishnah, the ones where you're only allowed to pour hot water over them, if you were to soak them in hot water when they weren't cooked before Shabbos, then you'd be chayv chatas for mavash for cooking. But if they weren't cooked before Shabbos, right? Okay. So now the Gemara is going to tell a story which is eventually going to relate back to this matter of kol yisei spanim. The Gemara tells Yosef Rav Chiya bar Abba and Rav Asi kamed Rav Yechanan. Rav Chiya bar Abba and Rav Asi were one time sitting as talmidim in front of Rav Yechanan. The Yosef Rav Yechanan would come and namnim. Rav Yechanan was sitting and dozing and napping. You have, by the way, a few places in the Gemara where it mentions this kind of thing, where Chacham is sitting and napping while his talmidim are in front of him. One idea of it might be that it teaches us how devoted they were to Torah, that even though he's so tired, he needs to take a nap, he still has his talmidim in front of him. You don't just say, you know what, let's break for the day and I need to go get a couple of hours of sleep. Anyway. So Rav Chiya bar Abba asked Rav Asi, why are the birds in Bavel so fat? Amalei says they're not necessarily the fattest. Klochla Midbar Aza, go to Midbar Aza, which is part of Eretz, the desert near Aza, which is part of Eretz Yisrael. Ba'arecha Shmeinim Ehenim, I'll show you even fatter ones. So your premise is wrong. The ones in Bavel are not the fattest ones out there. Then he asked him, why are the Yavim Tovim in Bavel so much happier? They make much more simcha on Yom Tov in Bavel than they do in Eretz Yisrael. He says, because they're poor in Bavel. So like this, they have extra on Yom Tov. They save up the whole rest of the year. They don't get to eat and drink a lot, and they have to work hard and whatever. So on Yom Tov, they enjoy it extra much because now they have good food and whatever. And he asked another question, why do the Talmidei Chachamim in Bavel dress so nicely as compared to the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael? He says, Laficha Einan B'nei Torah, because they're not such B'nei Torah, so therefore people are not going to honor them as much because of their Torah. They're going to honor them more because of the nice clothing that they wear. And Namachom is supposed to wear decent clothes, but in other words, like this, in Bavel, they made a point of wearing particularly nice, fancy clothes or whatever. So he's saying, because they're not B'nei Torah, and therefore, if they don't wear fancy clothes, then people aren't going to honor them as much for their Torah as compared to the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, who are much greater Tamar Chachamim, and people honor them for their Torah. Well, that's true also, right. So different time, exactly. Here we're talking in the time of Rabbi Yechanan. In the time of Rabbi Yechanan, in the time of Rabbi Yechanan, we find that there were many Chachamim from Bavel who were going to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah because the caliber of learning in Eretz Yisrael at that point was much higher. With that said, there is a different explanation that some of the Mefarshim have. When he says, L'ficha einim b'nei Torah, he means the people of Bavel in general are not b'nei Torah. So they're the kind of people, they don't know the importance of the regular, the Hamoin Am, don't understand the importance of Torah. And therefore, they're not going to honor the Talmid Chachamim unless the Talmid Chachamim are wearing fancy clothing. Okay. And he asked him a fourth question. Why are the Goyim spiritually filthy? Beruchnius, they're very filthy and disgusting people, Beruchnius. And he says, because they eat creepy, crawly creatures, and those have an effect on a person's neshama. Okay. So now, as they finished that discussion, Rabbi Yochanan woke up from his nap. Amalahu, he says to them, Daudiki, children, in other words, like Bacharim, you don't yet know the proper Svaris. Loikach amarti lachem, haven't I previously told you a vote? The Pasuk says in Mishle, Emor lachochma achosiyat, say to Chochma, meaning the Chochma of Torah, you are my sister. And we learn from that, Im bora lacha davaka achoscha shiyasura lacha. If something in Torah is as clear to you as it's clear about your sister that she's also to you, then you should say it. If not, then don't say it. Why are you giving answers to these questions when you don't know the real answers? So they say, okay, so Rebbe, you tell us some of them. Why some of them? Ben Yehoyada says, they say to themselves, look, we can't have been wrong on all four of them. Misama, maybe we got one or two of them right. So at least the ones that we got wrong, tell us. So he says like this. You're asking why the birds in Bavel are so fat. And the answer was that they're not. In fact, the ones in Midbar Azar are fatter. The real reason is because the birds in Bavel never went into Golus, unlike the ones in Eretz Yisrael. We're going to see in a second. Shanema, we find a concept that when people or whatever did not go into Golus, that they're much stronger. The Pasuk says, Shanan Moyav min Orav. Moyav has been calm since their youth. They never had the kind of trouble where they went into Golos or whatever. Veshoikatu el Shmorav, they're sitting comfortably on their dregs. The metaphor is taken from like a barrel of wine that's been sitting there a long time where all the dregs sank to the bottom and the wine on top is clear. So the same way Moyav hasn't been shaken up. So therefore, yeah. Vagoyla leholach, they never went into Golos. And therefore, the Pasuk continues, therefore, they're strong and therefore, they're still strong. So the same thing, the birds in Babel never went into Golos, therefore they're still strong and fat. So, okay, the ones in Eretz Yisrael, where do we see that the birds went into Golos? The Tanya. We learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, Nun Beis Shana Le'ova Ish B'Yehuda. For 52 years after the Korban, no people passed through Eretz Yehuda. So the land itself, the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, the Jewish people were taken into Golos. You had the few Jews who were left over there with Gedaliah, where afterwards Gedaliah was assassinated and then they all got scared and ran off to Mitzrayim. At that point, Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz Yehuda, the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, was completely depopulated for 52 years. The 52 years is until Kodesh made his announcement that the Jewish people can come and build the second Beis Hamikdash. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says in the Haftorah of Tisha B'Av, so it's very, very Negeah now, the Pasuk says, Ala horim esa b'chivan nehi v'gomer. The Pasuk says, on the mountains of Eretz Yisrael, I'll lift up a cry and a moan, meaning that the Navi is saying, I'll mourn for the destruction of Eretz Yisrael. And the Pasuk continues, Me'ofa shamayim bad behema nodadu halachu, from the birds of the heavens until the animals, all of them nodadu halachu, they all wandered and went away. And the word behema, b'gematria, chamshin v'tarjin habu, the word behema is gematria, 52. So we see that for 52 years, there weren't even any birds or animals in that part of Eretz Yisrael. The place was completely empty. Now you have the Psukim in Parshas Nitzavim that mentioned Gofris v'malach Srefa kol ha'atza. The whole land was punished with sulfur and salt. So even animals can't find a place to live in a place like that. Nothing will grow. Like as it continues, like when Sodom and Amorah were turned over, nothing grows there, so you don't even have any animals over there. So that's the point. Even the birds couldn't find anything to eat. So they also flew away. So they also, for once, there's no people, no animals, and no plants or anything, because Golf is for Melach, so even the birds left. So therefore, that's what we're saying. The birds went into Golos, therefore the ones in Eretz Yisrael are not such good quality. Now, what about the ones in Midbar Aza? Marsha points out, yes, Midbar Aza is La Halacha, part of Eretz Yisrael, but practically speaking, at that time, it was in the hands of the Plishtim. So only the land that was in the hands of the Jewish people at that time had this Gzeira of Golos and Gofris of Melech, etc. The part that was owned by the Plishtim, yeah, they were conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, but whatever, maybe they even went into Golos, but their land did not suffer from that same punishment. So therefore, their birds stayed there, so therefore, their birds can be fat too. All of the birds and animals eventually ended up returning to Eretz Yisrael, except for the Kol Yasei Sponin, which we mentioned in the Mishnah over here, this fish that has a very soft skin and therefore is very easily cooked in hot water, that never returned. Why? Rav explains like this, that you have the Ein Etam as a high place in Eretz Yisrael. That's where they had the spring that provided water for the Beis Mikdash. So Rav explains, Bavel is more low-lying. But what you have is, there's like underground tunnels from the river Prus that go, and they actually go up the because you have, in general, you have, if a river starts out on a high elevation, even though later on it flows lower, eventually you have the water pressure can allow it to still go back up, to go back up underground to the at least to the original height of the mountains that it came from. So therefore, so Rav says that's what happens. The water from the Pras in Bavel goes through underground tunnels like that, uphill, back to Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, so that's how all the other fish returned, by way of those tunnels. The hide, but when it comes to the Kol Yisrael spine, given the shorter Shidre, because its spine is not so strong, it has a very soft spine, Loi Motzi Solik, it didn't have the energy to be able to swim upstream like that, not upstream, but uphill, back to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore it stayed in Bavel and other places and never returned to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow with the answers to the other three questions, with Rabbi Yochanan's answers to the other three questions, and we'll have a little more agadah on the subject as well. Okay, shkach.